Blog Talk Radio.
I'm gonna put the kitchen back, right back here.
Richard, stop this. I don't know what you're saying.
I bought it. This whole acre. I'm gonna build you a house. Right here. Our house.
Scene from one of my favorite movies of the year, Loving, directed by Jeff Nichols, and starring Joe Edgerton and Ruth Negga as Richard and Mildred Loving, the couple whose Supreme Court case, Loving versus Virginia, opened the door for people of other races to marry one another. It had been illegal up to that point, and in their case, they had gone outside of Virginia to get married out in D.C. When they returned home to Virginia, they were arrested and forced to leave the state for more than a decade. During that time, they very quietly fought to be able to return home as husband and wife. It's an incredible story. Most people know it from the HBO documentary that came out a few years ago. I believe that's when Jeff Nichols himself first really, really dug into it. I think he talks about that in the interview that's coming up, actually. That interview is with Nichols, who's one of my favorite directors. I don't think he's made a bad movie yet. Mud, Midnight Special, Take Shelter, Shotgun Stories. I don't think he's made a misstep yet. He certainly does it with Loving, which, if, as you know, is a film that I think, out of a year that has a number of movies dealing with the black experience or dealing with race, I feel that Loving, so far, is the best one. I think you can make a case for Moonlight, maybe, but I feel like if you're talking about a movie that's going to be a uniter, that movie is Loving. So not only did I get to talk with Nichols, but I also spoke with Joel Edgerton, who is another fantastic actor. I've seen him in The Great Gatsby and Warrior and Animal Kingdom. Great actor, and he's terrific in Loving also. I didn't get a chance to talk to Ruth Negga, although she was in the building. She was not feeling well. But I want you to check out that interview. It's a great interview. It's about 10, 11 minutes. And then go see Loving in theaters. Support it. It's a fantastic movie. All right? Enjoy the interview. Thanks.
So how's DC treating you guys? Good?
I love DC, man. Yeah? I spent a couple of months here once doing a play, and I loved it.
I didn't know.
Really?
Yeah.
What play?
I'm floored by this town. Every time I come to this town. In all seriousness, we got a private tour of the African American History Museum last night.
See, that's not fair. The guys like me can't even get
a
seat.
I mean, no. Like, look, trust me. I walk up to that place, they wouldn't. You know, I've been on this press tour for 2 weeks now,
mm-hmm.
and we've had our LA premiere. We've had some important screenings, but my family hasn't been here. But I purposely flew them in, my wife and my six-year-old son, so that we could go through that tour.
Nice.
Because we were the first,
feature film.
Feature film to play and have a screening there.
So I was going to ask, didn't you guys have a showing there?
Did that show 13th there?
No. I think she made a film for the museum.
Ah.
And she directed one for the museum that they screened there, I believe. It was a short film. Yeah, they had a screening there. But while the screening happened, we were taken around as a group. I mean, it's a pretty monumental experience.
Yeah, I bet. Loving is obviously a very important movie around this area in Virginia, you know. A lot of people still have memories of all that. So so talk to me a little bit about the decision to make this movie. A lot of people know the story, but it's never really been brought to the screen like this before. So talk to me a little bit about the decision to want to do this movie, tell this story right now.
Wanting to do it and how I did it, they kind of line up, I suppose, but wanting to do it really came from watching The Loving Story, which is a documentary by
mm-hmm.
Mary Tversky. That was my first interaction with the story at all, which honestly, I was struck by the fact that was too late for me to hear about that story. That was in 2012. Why didn't I know about this much sooner? But also, when you watch that documentary, you just fell in love with these people. I wanted to be with them more. And they were offering me the opportunity to turn this into a narrative film, so it made sense to choose to be with them, to make a film from their point of view. And as a storyteller, as a filmmaker, when you latch on to point of view like that, it defines everything. And so, you know, the way I told this story, I very much wanted it to reflect the people at the center of that point of view.
Yeah, that was one of the things I was going to ask you about, because one of the things I really, really loved about it, as someone who's kind of studied up on it a little bit, was that the movie, and this goes to your performance as well, Joel, is very understated compared to some other movies that may have dramatized it a little bit more. You know,
right.
Hollywood did it up, I guess.
Yeah.
Your filmmaking, your performances are very understated. Talk to me a little bit about the decision to go in that direction.
Well, you know, I think, there are about three different ways to answer it.
No,
it's
just pick one.
I've got three different ways to do it. You know, I think the legal instrument of the Supreme Court is a beautiful one.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very powerful one. It can actually call into action things that our society are not ready for, but need to deal with. Despite that fact, though, all of the ideas of the legality of Loving v. Virginia, it sometimes takes you away from what's really at the heart of it, which are these people and the specificity of their lives, which I think you can use as an example or model to take out in the world today and say, okay, what political topics or religious topics or legal topics are we going over right now that we should pause and hold up some people to, you know, the humanity at the center of them. That's what I think is important. And so it made sense then to make a film that was about those specifics, was about their day-to-day lives.
Mm-hmm.
Butcher that.
It was fine, man. What are you talking about?
And on a performance level, I think that, you know, I've said this a number of times, but I think very accurate is that, you know, you talk about Hollywooding up something, you know, adding more wood to the Hollywood, piling it on the wood pile.
You know, I'm going to use that, right?
To tell a true story truthfully is very rare.
Yeah.
And there's something about the honesty of this story and the decision and approach to stay inside the domestic lives of this couple that gives you an empathetic sort of stroll down their road.
Mm.
And that's the key to understanding each other and you know, in the beginnings of conversation or the continuing conversation of judgment and whether we have the right to judge another person if we haven't walked down their road. You know, the truth of Richard and Mildred is they weren't willing revolutionaries, and they were very quiet, shy.
Yeah.
And that those sort of people are they're not the typical Martin Luther Kings of the world that we look up to and kind of revere, but they're more the kind of on our level revolutionaries that we can relate to, because we go, wow, I could actually have changed places with you. And what would I feel like if my door was kicked down in the middle of the night,
right,
and I was dragged out of my private space and asked to hold a, you know, make an account and justification for that private space in a public arena? And they were very shy. They weren't speech makers. And it was important, I think, therefore, on that mantra of telling that true story truthfully, to go, okay, well, how do we express the truth of those people? And Jeff, you know, laid it out in the screenplay. It's like there's a handful of polished words that come out of each of their mouths. Mildred's are more polished and quotable than Richard's, but you know, the quiet space that existed between them says a lot, and says a lot about what they really endured and how injustice really kind of pushes and forces a person into keeping their mouth shut.
Had this story crossed over into Australia? Had you heard of it before?
No. I'm sure there are people that have heard about this story who, you know, the majority of people I know that know about the story are people whose lives reflect a similarity. Like they're the product of two parents who were different colours, you know.
Yeah.
Or they're law students. But no, I thought I was off the hook because I'm Australian for not knowing about this couple. But it's amazing how many Americans don't know about them too.
Yeah.
But then going to that museum last night, you see how many stories there are in this country, and particularly in relation to civil rights movement, that are untold stories. Some of them are gentle and beautiful and full of heart and, you know, make you laugh. And other ones just, you make you want to turn away.
We're about to wrap up. You two have already had a great year. Midnight Special, this, two of my favorite movies this year, between the two of you. You guys looking to work together again after this, I hope?
Never.
After this interview's over, I can't. I'm bombing Jeff with tech. Like, what are we doing next? You're the only one that makes me look good.
He's in the family.
Yeah.
He's in the family.
You do seem to be building a little close-knit group of people, man.
Yeah,
for some reason, they keep coming back to me.
Look, you know, I've been really lucky to work with some of the greatest actors in the world, you know?
And the crew.
All these people are my family, you know? But it's like, yeah, you know, you've got Joel and Ruth now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, Mike Shannon's a friend of mine, and Jessica Chastain and Matthew McConaughey and Reese Witherspoon.
You got to get them all in one movie. How are you going to do that?
I don't know, but that doesn't even. Then you start to get, you know, the rest of the group between Bill Camp, Ray McKinnon, Paul Sparks, Shea Whigham. Mm-hmm. You know, these are people. Adam Driver, Midnight Special. Got to get that guy in a movie. You know, like he needs help.
Yeah, he doesn't have enough to do.
I think he's flailing. please don't print that. That is not that was obviously
Nicholas Kyler Rand
flailing.
Sorry, man.
No,
it's the headline.
I'm dying to see Patterson. But anyway, you know, these.
I just saw it. It's good.
You know, these people. I'm a big Jarmusch fan. But you know, I happen to be friends with really, really talented people. So that makes me lucky.
Yeah. But yeah, take it from me, on the street amongst actors, they're all, you know, we all want to work with good people because they're the people who make us look good.
Yeah.
So there's,
I love that visual. Everybody. You guys just trading baseball cards and directors. Yeah. Alleyway.
I'll give you a nickel for it. But, you know, I'm very envious of Jeff because I remember, I don't know what it was like for you, when I was trying to make a movie, it was like I was a shark swimming in a tuna pond. Because as I got closer to all of them, they swam away.
That's not true.
No, it's true. You got to prove yourself. And once you prove yourself, he could cast anyone in a movie now. I'm sure of it.
Yeah.
Let's call Tom Cruise now.
Do you have his number?
You know what? I don't.
Sorry.
Thanks a lot, you guys. This has been fantastic.
You.
All right, that was my interview with Jeff Nichols and Joel Edgerton for the new film Loving, which is out in theaters right now. And like I said, I think it's going to be big this award season, so check it out. Thanks. This has been Travis Hobson of Cinema Royale. I will see you soon on the regular show, just a few days. Thanks. Bye.